Blog Talk Radio.
Because it's already come and gone, but it is still a new year to Marty Oakley's TS Radio Network and to everybody listening to the show tonight. We're coming back to you live and strong on, again, Marty Oakley, the legendary host and advocate. And as well, we are being broadcast live on Stephen Burke's KLRB 89.9 FM radio out of Stuart, Oklahoma. I'm Tanya Hathaway, and welcome again to TNT Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'm going to quickly get our guest on because there's just so much to share with you. But before that, I would like to let you know that, as we all know, and I continue to say, I am not a lawyer, so I cannot provide any kind of legal advice. And we hold the network, the radio station, and anybody else who records, and as well as myself, that we are not liable for any content that's brought to you in error. But I can assure you again that our guests are well vetted. And tonight, we are going to talk about a guest, Edwin Turlington, forgive me, that has been on our show before. The first time he was on with two other vets on Veterans Day, and then he was on shortly after. Ed is facing an arraignment hearing tomorrow, and there's a circus going on in Delaware County, let me tell you. We are looking for advocates, any advocates that are out there, any court watchers that are out there in the northeast area of Oklahoma that can make it at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. The courthouse is in Jay, Oklahoma. Please take a look at the Facebook page Injustice in Oklahoma Exposed, and you'll find the information there, as well as, if you haven't already, you might want to listen during the quick break that we're going to have in the middle of the show, where this promo was just now posted again. As a reminder, there's also some audio clips, a couple minutes worth, that you're not going to want to miss, whether it's during our break or after the show, that will let you know just another piece of how atrocious this situation is, because we've got a town that is protecting a known felon, multi-time felon, who currently has an arrest warrant out for him, at least one. That town is protecting Philpott, his name is, because he's a snitch. And Philpott happened to be claiming that he was cutting wood on the property of the Turlington families, and yet he was seemingly cooking meth along with others. Ed was accosted by this man and threatened by him, and Ed had to defend himself as a last-ditch effort. He shot him in the leg. So now he is being charged with attempted homicide, I believe, and Ed will clarify this, and looking at 10 years, being taken off a family farm to go live there with his wife and young children, and somebody intruded and invaded, a known felon, and lo and behold, suddenly this ex-vet, this, well, never an ex-vet, forgive me, retired vet, police officer, private investigator, is being charged with nonsense. We're going to hear it much better from Ed himself. So, Ed, thank you so much for coming again on the show. I know this is very difficult. This has been going on for a couple of years now, and you have done a great job with documenting all that you have, and most recently, you have learned about other incidents about this man who is claiming that you shot him without reason. So I want you to share with us, but first, thank you once again for being on the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very good, Tanya. Thank you very much for having me on the show, and thank you for your compliments on my record keeping. I would like to point out that I'm a former law enforcement officer and a certified Oklahoma private investigator, and I cannot help but wonder how many people have been falsely put in prison that were poor, uneducated, untrained in law enforcement, had no idea how to do what I've done to defend themselves at the hands of this guy, Melvin Gale Wells, who set me up, which we'll get into. But he's been here for 30 years, so there is no telling how many innocent people he has put away, and I want to put that out. And secondly, I want to tell you that my charge, what you're thinking was, and there was a Tulsa World article that came out on April 16th. I was arrested on April 14th. And in that article,
and what
the sheriff.
Year?
Yes, ma'am, can you hear me?
Yes, what year?
Of 2014.
Okay.
I'm talking too fast. I'm sorry. I told you I wouldn't do that.
No, it's my fault. I tell you what, I might be even more nervous than you are about this show because I have to make sure that I am getting it right. And because you deserve it. All of our guests deserve it. But I've learned so much very recently that, you know, I'm also looking at all the notes as we're talking, so forgive me if I repeat myself or ask you to repeat yourself.
Well, ma'am, even the fact that I retired from the military in 2017. So, I mean, it's I don't think it's a coincidence all these things happened the way they did, and I'm the guy that it happened to who has the training and the knowledge and the experience and the time on his hands to devote thousands of hours on this case. There is nobody has spent anywhere near as much time, hours on this case as I have. But what I want to tell you was 2 days after I was arrested, it was on April 16, 2014, in the Tulsa World Paper, and everything I tell you tonight will be linked to my site at www.firstfamilies.net. And the most recent stuff is firstfamilies.net/, with first being spelled out, F-I-R-S-T, families, plural, .net. But this Tulsa World paper came out, and it stated Ed Turlington was arrested on complaints of felony assault with a firearm and shooting with an intent to kill after the shooting, so and so forth. And that is probably what you're thinking about, because it was when you said attempted murder or homicide, but it never was filed as that. It was that's what the cops wanted to charge me as, but they couldn't justify it, even with the help they were getting from the DA's office. He did not charge me with that. I wound up getting aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, which carries a sentence of 10 years.
Okay, and so before we go too much further, okay, I want our listeners to know two very important things besides everything else that we're going to talk about. But really, the focus of this show is, once again, you know, when things go wrong, you're supposed to be able to make them right, all right? So how is it that we can make things right if the people that are supposed to help us make them right are actually the accomplices, all right? So you know, this is how do law enforcement officials, you know, how they conceal informants' violence and the tendencies of this informant, Philpott, who is, you know, essentially ruining your life, but the law enforcement officials is supposed to, and the courts is supposed to, and the prosecutor is supposed to be charging Philpott, not you. But so how is it? This is, again, the theme. How is it and why is it that these law enforcement officials are aiding and abetting and covering up for this snitch, felon?
Well,
somebody who's got a rap sheet that has about 9 pages to it once it's all opened up and explained. And why are they protecting him and not you? Well, I say, you know what, part of that is, well, now it's too late. Now they've got to save face. But I tend to think that based on the status of your brother and all the work that you have done, that after your hearing, listen up, please, especially Oklahoma, if you are there, okay, in the Northeast Corridor section of Oklahoma tomorrow, that after the arraignment, Ed's arraignment tomorrow, Full Bird, colonel in the U.S. Army JAG Corps, active, Full Bird colonel. Look it up if you don't know what it is because it's really important. But he's also a lawyer, licensed in Oklahoma, but he is not allowed to practice law in Oklahoma because he has to stay within the realms of what he does with the Army. But he has many paralegals and many attorneys working under him in the Army. He is well-respected and only answers to a few above him. He has been given the permission to, after Ed's arraignment tomorrow, to be able to do a brief. He is going to be at Mazzio's in Grove, Oklahoma at noontime. And he is going to be giving a brief about his brother's matter. And boy, oh boy, if this prosecutor and these police officers aren't shaking in their boots with all that has been provided, I don't know what will do it. But one thing we know is we are not going to let this happen to you, Ed. We know the truth. And the truth will reveal itself. And the truth will also reveal those that are doing this to you. So they better back down real fast.
Well, Tanya, okay. The good news with that is that the tide is turning. And I think that it probably started when I went and did my own research into I went to the archives in the basement across the street from the courthouse in Benton County, Arkansas, to pull out 3 of his felonies that weren't even on the record online, and a lot of other stuff that he perjured himself about. And I compiled this really lengthy rap sheet, a record and prosecution sheet that we spoke about. And remember, the misdemeanors, they rarely, especially if they were a year or two, or they're just now starting to make it online in most of the jurisdictions around here, misdemeanors, but most jurisdictions do not have misdemeanors, which is a serious crime. It's any crime that's 1 year or less punishable in jail. So Philpott can slap his wife, and he's a wife beater and an ex-wife beater after they were divorced. I can get into that later, but he can sprain her ankles or give her black eyes or a lot of this stuff. Unless it's permanent, it's not a felony, and it never shows up. So you have to go look. You have to go talk to use the Freedom of Information Act to get paperwork on this stuff from courthouses and police stations. That's how I got these videos that you've seen where he's threatening a cop that he's going to kill him and he gets his handcuffs off. That was 6 months ago
The short recap of the events is that, Ed, you are you're a disabled veteran. You found
yes,
a group of men trespassing on your family's land near your house, on the family, actually, near, it was near your house, but it was on your family land, And you executed,
yes,
you wound up executing a citizen's arrest. You told them that they were under arrest. You told them he was under arrest, that they were under arrest, and one of the men is Philpott, a violent, multiple felon drug addict, Daryl Philpott. And he came at you with a glass bottle. And after you used the approach that you were taught in the Army, which was to, you know, I'm looking for my notes. I think it's EOP, Elements of Force, or Purpose, it's
Escalation
of Force. EOP. After you used the appropriate EOF, which most people that wouldn't have done because they wouldn't know how to determine this, that they aren't trained, but you took every route that you possibly could to determine if this was a violent, how violent the situation was. And so it's my understanding that he was...
Again, Tanya.
Okay.
But what you just said, keep in mind, I had a firearm pointed on him under arrest when he reached down to pick up a bottle off the ground. And he admitted
correct
this. And, in fact, I have this on my line, the transcript from his testimony, where he said that he picked up the bottle to check it to see if the recent raindrops had filled it somehow enough that he could extinguish the fire that he had set on the land he had trespassed, which is, of course, ridiculous. It's nuts. But
right,
that's what
right.
That was his story.
Yeah,
I'm telling you.
That was
I'm telling you.
That wasn't his story at the moment. That right. So we'll get to that because that wasn't the story that he took the time to give you at that moment, right? So you used the de-escalation methods. You tried to combat the violence.
That glass bottle. Yes, ma'am.
Right.
Any uniform cop,
right,
and he would have been within his rights to shoot him dead the minute he picked up that bottle.
Okay.
And
you tried
to
deter that. So the subsequent investigation began with the conclusion that you were the aggressor and Philpott was a victim. Well,
exactly. About
okay.
What was
so,
that? 2 minutes into the interview with Philpott, the investigator started it with he was the victim. And that's before they talked to me or even talked to Philpott. He had started off the interview with the decision that Philpott was the victim. And that's
right.
Online.
So that's the narrative that Delaware County, the police department, and consequently the prosecutor has determined that they wanted to go with. So now we'll just say to you, okay, so, all right. We already have said blatantly, we know that he is violent and dangerous and all this is alleged, but guess what? He's been charged. He's been found guilty many, many times. So he is a career criminal. But how do we know? Let's let our audience know, our listeners, that Philpott really is violent and dangerous, that violent and dangerous person that you claim he is.
Well, ma'am, going back to, because this is, like I said, he's a career criminal, and his felonies stretch from 1981 when he was 20 all the way up to 2017. So
I have from 1979.
The crimes start there, but the felony conviction of felony start the next 2 years later in 81.
Mhm.
And during that time, he was a wife beater, like I said. She testified
Let's talk about
that,
these things.
He came to her house after they were divorced. She got two protective orders while they were married. Then she got one after they were divorced. So it wasn't a domestic issue. It was just regular assault. He went to her house, and she had a friend visiting with her baby. And, of course, Philpott was drunk like he almost always is, and he wanted to hold the baby. And his wife's friend said, no, not when you're drunk. I don't want you to hold my baby. So Philpott started kicking their dog around the house. He shoved his little girl across the room. He slapped his wife in the face. He told him he's going to burn down the house. And then he just started destroying the house, just started tearing
up. And
this
is all on record. This is all on record, correct?
It's all on my site. It's public record. In fact, it's on the Internet. I got that one off the Internet from the Arkansas, from from their website. But then he told me to come burn down
Arkansas
their house.
And Arkansas and your area, they are, you're very close to the border of Arkansas. So
Philpott
is a regular in Arkansas. So let's
and
get
Missouri.
That clear for our listeners.
He's, but he doesn't, get, he doesn't get in trouble when he comes over here. He can cook meth, 100 feet off the county road in plain sight. And he doesn't get in trouble
right. In
Oklahoma. My farm is 4 miles from where Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri meet. And Philpott's a snitch over here in Delaware County, Oklahoma. He doesn't get in trouble here.
So, police records from 79 to 2010, wife beater, child abuser, drunk driver, drug dealer, statutory rapist, felon conviction for robbery. We also have, there's two new arrests, right, since you
yes,
have
ma'am.
Shot him. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. And again, all this is known. Don't forget, I had to go out looking for it, but all the prosecutors know this stuff. They have access immediate to all this stuff. So they knew what kind of guy Philpott was, and I'm skipping. But the same guy that's prosecuting me prosecuted Philpott in 2001 for crimes.
And,
so he
and
knew
who is
Philpott, and when Philpott
let's
lied
let,
on the
let's
stand
let the
and committed perjury
know.
About his crimes, the prosecutor knew that he was committing perjury. But,
and can you name the prosecutor for our listeners?
Oh, I would love to. His name is Nick Lelicus. He's a second-generation American, born and raised in Boston, down the road from where you're from. And he went to college in Connecticut.
Damn.
He went to college in Connecticut. And now he's a prosecutor in Jay, Oklahoma, where the average income is just a little over $10,000. It's kind of an odd deal, really, if you ask me.
Yeah. Well, this kind of reminds me of the whole situation with the little town of Grove, Oklahoma, where James Treat has been exposing all the municipal corruption that's going on, and he's making great headway, and it's in the hands of very competent people now. And thank goodness that you haven't been as retaliated against as he has been, but then again, you are facing 10 years in prison.
Tanya, you just said Grove. The tree was in Grove.
Calvin.
You misspoke.
Forgive
I want you to clear that up.
Oh, the town of Grove. Oh, I've been there. I've been to that town of Grove, actually. It's a very small town right on that little lake. Right?
Okay. Yes, but Treat is not in Grove. He's someplace else.
Right, he's in Calvin, Oklahoma. Right.
Right, yeah.
Right.
You
just misspoke. Thanks for correcting me.
Okay.
I said, I'm so nervous for you tonight that I'm making these silly little mistakes. So thank you for
I'm
correcting
on top
me.
Of it.
I can always stand to be corrected, and, I will accept that any old time if I'm wrong. So thank you.
Well,
all right,
Grove is not a bad.
Right.
Yes.
We don't know Grove to be a corrupt town. We know nothing about that. So forgive me, listeners.
Right.
So, but we do know Calvin is, and we are having major issues with Delaware County here.
Yes,
so,
ma'am.
And Jay, Oklahoma, is in Delaware County. So, it's a county seat. He in 2016 he passed out drunk.
Yes, ma'am.
In the road.
In 2016, he was found out in both of these arrests in 2016 and in the summer of 2018. He was found drunk and passed out in the middle of a road. In 2016, Deputy Justin Crane of Benton County, Arkansas, found him in his car, passed out, with the engine running, and his foot was on the brake. And this is in the middle of the road.
And
Crane,
I've seen a video of that. That video is online,
exactly.
You guys.
Watch
it. Go over to his website. It is astounding.
But when he finally woke up, Philpott looked at him directly in the eyes and said, "Bye," and you can hear him. You can hear all this too. And he grabbed the gear shift to go, and that's when Crane grabbed him. And then Crane devoted 16 lines of text explaining the physical fight that Philpott offered him when he pulled Philpott out of the car. And
blood
from that
alcohol,
arrest,
.17, yep.
Which is over it's 1.5 times the legal limit.
Okay.
But
and at the jail, they found a bag of meth
exactly.
in his pocket.
Yes,
okay.
ma'am. But When they stopped him, he had two warrants for his arrest from Missouri that he had when he attacked me back in 2014, that he had before that in 2009. So there were
two open warrants for his arrest
from 2009.
And these are still open warrants. From where?
No.
Arkansas?
No. They were resolved as a result of the 2016 arrest. If Sheriff Gale Wells had not ignored those warrants and Philpott's extremely extraordinary long rap sheet, because he's a snitch, if you'd have taken those things into account and arrested Philpott, then those two warrants would have been taken care of. But since he covered for Philpott, and those Philpotts, those warrants stayed from 2009 all the way to the 2016 arrest, which he got his most recent meth felony, and he got two DWIs, one from that night and one from the warrants, and the other warrant they let him plead out on. And that's something you got to understand, Tanya, when these losers go to court. I mean, one of the times I'll count them later if you want. It's in the rap sheet on our website. He got pulled over and he got cited for 10 different charges with 10 crimes. But by the time he goes in front of the judge just takes off, you know, the two most important ones and lets him plead, just to get a plead out of him, and the rest he's not even arrested for. So that's why he's gonna...
And I want to talk about also what the prosecutor tried to get away with during the preliminary hearing. But before that, while we're on this subject, because this is not admissible in court, because Philpott was able to expunge a felony from his record, given the lax, disgusting laws and rules that allowed him to have this expunged from his record, where he had is this one, and help me out here, because you
let me explain it because that was, he perjured himself on that. In 1981, he was when he was 20 years old, he was arrested for and convicted on two felonies. One was a felony theft and one was a felony burglary. And he got a sweetheart deal in Arkansas. I think it was 1979 they passed Act 378. I might be wrong about the year they passed it, but it's Act 378. And Act 378 was a program for first-time offenders, where if they went through and were rehabilitated and everything, and then they would cover up their expunge their crimes. But within 3 or 4 months after those felonies, he got another felony, and that was for possession with intent. Now, possession with intent is a lot different than possession. Possession with intent means you're a drug dealer, and the law looks at you a lot differently if you're just like to go get high on, you know, by yourself or your friends in your living room, or if you're someone that goes out and sells it. So when he was at my
difference between possession and intent and the purpose.
Right. An intent is a dealer, is a drug dealer. You're intending to distribute.
Right.
The rest of that phrase is intent to distribute.
So when you've got a half a trash bag full of marijuana, that would deem it the intent or the purpose to distribute.
Now, let me throw this out here, Tanya, because I don't know if I even ever told you this. But his parole officer had to go write up a report on him when he got arrested with a half a trash bag of pot, because, you know, he'd already been charged with the other two felonies in the same year. And the parole officer's report, which I have linked from my site at firstfamilies.net, in that he said no, that Philpott is not a good candidate for any type of rehabilitatory program or anything like that. And he went on to note that Philpott told deputies, even though he finally signed off and agreed that there was with intent, the entire time he maintained that he found that half a trash bag of pot in a pond while he was fishing. And the reason that whenever the cops found him with it and it was being divided up and he had a bunch of baggies and they're put into baggies, he said, well, that wasn't so they could sell it. It's so that they could evenly share, distribute it with him and his friends and for their personal use. Now, I don't know if you're getting an idea of the kind of insane, this nut type excuses and logic he comes up with, kind of like when he picked up a glass bottle to see if rain had filled it up, you know, enough to pour out in the fire. If you can see him in the court, and I don't think it's going to go to court. I'm almost positive because I'm on the winning side now. But if it does, it will be the most entertaining thing you've ever seen, because he is more like Charles Manson than anyone I've ever met. His behavior.
Don't let
the
your guard down. Just don't let your guard down. Because these
right.
people are trying to save face, and they want to make it to the next election time, okay?
Now anyway, Philpott messed up several times, because one of the conditions of that expungement program was that you not get arrested again. Well, he got arrested again. I don't think he's gone a year in his life without being arrested, except for two long periods where he had bench warrants on his arrest, and he went underground. And by the way, he has a bench warrant issued from the one we haven't talked about yet today, this summer, when he threatened to kill the police officer. He failed to appear for that. All of these crimes he failed to appear for, and he failed to appear for that one in the summer, and he's currently on the loose with a bench warrant on his arrest. And his nephew, my neighbor, told me he's not going to any trial. He said, you'll never see him again. Yeah, he's not
right.
He's not about to show up now. But all that being said,
but you got to be careful. I mean, we don't know for
but
sure.
In 2011, Article 378 was repealed. So if you were expunged under that, you had to reapply. Now, by 2011, Philpott, if you were to see him now, like I said, he has no teeth. He looks like a skeleton, and he acts like
you're not making fun of his looks, but
I'm explaining.
He looks like his body, his rotted teeth is all in line with somebody who is, you know, unfortunately, a meth addict, a drug addict.
And his meth derangement syndrome. It's a syndrome, mm-hmm. and he loses his mind, and he talks and he communicates like Charles Manson, and he did that in the courtroom the entire time. And Lance sent me a note. He wants me to talk about the arrest with the 2018 arrest. I just wanted to make the point that since he never reapplied for expungement after 2011, that's why I was able to go into the archives in the basement across from the Benton County Courthouse and pull out these 40 years ago? These records from 1981 is because they're not expunged. They're sitting out there for the public.
Exactly. Okay, got you. So now,
I want to
make sure that we make this point and the theme of this show very, very clear, okay? Because in talking about the history during the preliminary hearing, your attorney at the time had questioned Daryl Philpott, and he had questioned him in the manner
to expel the information. Possession with intent. He asked specifically, was it with intent? And he said, no, it was not intent. It was not with intent.
So here Philpott is. He is sworn in, and he perjured himself by saying that he was arrested for possession, okay, as opposed to telling the truth, as your attorney is working hard for you at the time to gather information on his credibility and his history and where he was allowed to enter into questioning. Now, as well, I want to point out to our audience that the prosecutor, Nick, last name again?
Nick Relicus.
Nick Relicus. he was questioning Philpott, and he had asked Philpott, well, you and your attorney were at the table, right in front of the judge. There's one side and the other side, right? There's the prosecution side and there's the defendant side. So you and your attorney are at the defendant side in front of the judge, and he and the prosecutor are at the prosecution side as a plaintiff. And when he was, but yet when Philpott took this stand, and correct me if I'm wrong with any of this here, when he took this stand, the prosecutor had said, can you please point out the man that shot you? Is he in this room? And so he, so who did he point to? Can you tell our audience who Philpott actually pointed to?
Winston Connor, my lawyer. I can read out it to you from the transcripts. After he was asked, what's he wearing today? Philpott told him he's wearing pants and a jacket and a shirt and a tie. What color's the jacket?
Well, yes, and he even said plaid. Oh, okay, go ahead.
He said a gray color jacket. What about the tie? Plaid. And then Lelicus tried to get that entered in the record. He said, let the record reflect that he's identified the person that pulled the gun. That's what Nick Lelicus said. And my lawyer said, no, I'm the only one with a gray jacket and a plaid tie. And I assure you it wasn't me. So I'm telling you about something about Lance. In the military, the prosecutors, they don't try to – their goal is justice. They don't try to put people away just to put them away or to cover for a snitch or something like that. Lance, he told me that on the way over here, he read this preliminary transcript that I ordered, from front to back. First time he's ever done that. Every page. Yes, and he told me, he said, I have less faith in Nick than I did before. And Lance wanted to believe Nick, and he wanted to believe that Nick was really that stupid that he thought that a bullet that went into the flesh, you know, was big on the entry and small on the exit. And he wanted to believe that Nick was stupid enough to think that, perjury wasn't perjury and that, finding a key element in every meth recipe you can ever find on the Internet or otherwise, if you look up meth ingredients, one of the main ingredients is Coleman camp fuel. And guess what they cops found out there and took pictures of at the site where Philpott assaulted me? A can of Coleman camp fuel. Just what are the chances of them having that? But getting back to Nick.
Here.
Yeah, Nick is dishonest. He's dishonest, and he is he tried to have the record entered into him. He didn't do it. He's just not honest.
He was trying to create a record
that did not exist.
That was not correct by who Philpott pointed to, and given the clothing that was mentioned, he said that the person who did this
to you has been identified. Or something in the record that didn't happen, because he didn't identify me. He identified my lawyer. So,
but the point is, you admit that you shot him, right? But this just goes to show how much mush this guy's brain is filled with, and he has admitted on the record that he smokes weed every day. Correct? Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, and he. At the hospital, he said that he drank the 12-pack a day, but now he says he drinks whiskey every day because that changes off and on. And even him, when he admitted that, he also told that after he told the ER guys that emergency room, then he told, I know we're skipping a little bit, but he told the investigator, Melvin Gale Wells, the fraud, the one that changed, that commandeered the investigation from the detectives at this at the scene and molded it to fit his narrative, he told him that he had been drinking that night. And Wells ignored it and did not get a toxicology report. Had he got a toxicology report?
Well, in fact, didn't he say that he was actually sober or whatever his words were in his report?
On page 7, I think it was, on the probable cause affidavit, which is on my website, he said he admitted to drinking a half a pint of whiskey, but he appeared to be sober. And I don't know how one can appear to be sober or not sober if they're laying down in a hospital bed.
Yeah.
Now, later in the preliminary hearing, Philpott said he drank that half pint on the way to the hospital, 15 to 30 minutes before the interview. So there's a couple things going there, you know, besides Wells being a liar and him appearing drunk. If Wells had asked him, well, when did you do it, or when, if you just had him tested for a toxicology report, he would have turned up that he was drunk and he was stoned and everything else.
Go ahead.
Lance just gave me a note again. He wants me to talk about the 2008 arrest, oh, right, since it's recent, okay, before we run out of time.
The 2018 one.
Yes, ma'am. That's the one where he told the police officer, the arresting officer, that I'm going to kill you when I get out of these handcuffs, and the only reason you're not dead is because I'm in these handcuffs. And he said, F you, you MFing Negro, except he didn't say Negro.
Right.
Those are the files that I sent, that I uploaded for you tonight.
Right, and on Injustice in Oklahoma Exposed Facebook page, it is at the top of the page right now, where I have shared the link to this show, but not only that, attached those audios. But again, if you want to get a very in-depth picture and reality of all of this, please, there is a link there to Ed Turlington's page, the firstfamilies.net
/recent.htm on the right-hand side. It has these audio clips, and you pointed out earlier that we could not play them tonight, according to Marty, your producer, because they were so violent and filthy. They're not suited.
Well, yeah. FCC will just like lambaste her, as well as the Christian radio station that broadcasts this show and is live right now. So, but that doesn't mean that you do not have access to these audios. So I have to say that are allegedly the voice of Philpott. Okay?
Oh no, ma'am, they're not allegedly. This comes straight from the official police video. Okay.
I get it. I totally get it. I totally get it. You know, and
he threatened to kill a cop 4 times, by the way.
Right. 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 So yeah, and that's just for liability's sake. I saw the videos. I saw it all. It's just a matter of, you know, for liability for the station. So I am 100% behind you, on your side. Your brother certainly is. We're all on your side. You know, thank God that your brother has been able to take the time and like dig deep into this, what you have already known. You know your story better than anybody else. You know it all better than anybody else. But, you know, with your brother being an attorney and a high-ranking colonel, it's really great to have him on your side as well. God knows you deserve it. I can't even imagine what you've been going through. Can't even imagine it.
Whenever the accused calls a reporter or something or tries to explain something to him, the moment they say, I was arrested, you're just moments away from being hung up on. So that's why if you have an advocate, an attorney or something like that, it does make a world of difference. Even if he's saying the exact same thing that the accused said in the exact same manner, the fact that someone's saying it who has, you know, a lot to lose and is not arrested, it makes a big difference, a way big difference.
So, correct. So, you know, in – you know, so it's, you know, this is all terrible. And this is exactly how it relates to your court case. You know, there's two reasons why his past relates to this court case where you're being arraigned tomorrow. We've got credibility and the patterns of his behavior. So I tell you what, but before we get onto that, we're just going to take a little break, and Marty's going to play something for us. And we can Just take a few breaths, and everybody please enjoy this break. And it's with some music and, that this woman made that had her mother was taken away. Here's here.
I've been lying here thinking about the day we met, the day forever was set, and how much time we've got left. I find myself crying, my eyes out. I gotta make you believe in me without one doubt. I'm gonna make
regrets as we can in our lives. And, you know, I kind of think that some people are regretting their actions in Delaware County right about now. And they know that they're being watched. And so let's get back to what the heck is going on. And you had said that you wanted to share some current incidences. And I encouraged that because we are, again, we're talking about, Ed, we're talking about why this matters, you know, what he's done before, why and how this would matter and make a difference in your case, you know?
Yes, ma'am. On July 21st of 2018. That was this last summer. Philpott had just, the year previous, he just got convicted for felonies, for his last meth felony. These two DWIs, another marijuana charge, and not even a year goes by from those convictions that he is found again in the middle of the road, passed out drunk by Arkansas County Sheriff's Deputy Cedric Lampkin. And this time, Philpott, now, I should have told you, stressed this before, Tanya, but this man is 57 years old. So when you
He's
hear him...
He's been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, and he doesn't learn. So when you hear him trying to kick out the windows in the back of this vehicle and calling him these filthy names and challenging him to fight and telling him to beat him up and kill me, he has a death wish. He's insane. But when you hear these things, it's coming from a 57-year-old man, not some drunk, stupid kid. But
and this is a common pattern with him also, isn't it? It seems
exactly.
That whenever he is confronted by law officers, that he's basically violently challenging him.
He did exactly to these two deputies what he did to me when I arrested him. Exact same sequence of events. When he first saw me, he looked at me and made a beeline for his truck that was on my family's property without tags on the back, which indicates criminal intent, taking the tags off. And him and his buddies.
Right. His license plate. Listeners,
took off the license plate.
He had
tried to flee.
Is it the indication to you, as far as you know, that he had license plates to begin with? You know what I mean? Because he sounds like such a mess, and he gets away with so much. Do you think they would have stopped him? Even if. I'm just playing devil's advocate here so the listeners can hear, you know, any questions that might be in their mind. You're going to answer what you think about it.
No. When I pull up and I see three strangers standing around a fire right underneath my family's no trespassing sign, and they have a guy out on the road in the car that appears to be a lookout, whether he was or not, he was out in the car, out in the road talking to them. They were set off from the road, and they looked like they were had some cans and bottles and stuff like that. And then those guys back there see me talking to this guy on the road, which the police lied about in the probable cause affidavit. I don't know if you want to get to that or not, but I have proof of that in this guy's testament. It conflicts with the probable cause statement, the police reports. But I don't know if you want to go that direction. This, there's so many lies and deceit and trickery here, we could literally be on the phone all night. But anyway, they looked at me and made a – and then the scenario is going on, and then they have a truck without its tags on. Well, regardless of what the reason that they take it off, when it's combined with all these other things going on, that makes it much more likely that they're committing a crime than they're not committing a crime. And I don't even need to worry about probable cause or reasonable suspicion whenever they're sitting there underneath my own no trespassing. I know they're trespassing.
Right. This was happening right within sight of these trespassing
road,
signs that your family
road.
Has put up.
Right. Yes.
Right. Okay.
And that night, remember, the cops took over 100 pictures that night of the burn pile. They had 30 pictures of the burn pile, but 100 pictures overall, and somehow they managed to not get the no trespassing sign that was 10 feet away that Detective Frank Miller did go out the following day on his own time and got a picture of and entered it into the record on my behalf. He's on my side.
Okay, well, that's it. Okay.
Every cop,
who
every detective.
Who is the officer that's on your side?
Every cop, every detective, every road patrol in this county, except for the people involved in this, and one, someone I disparaged in the Grove unit, every single one of the person, if you talk to them, they'll tell you they're on my side, to a man.
Right.
It's the top couple guys that are crooked that conspire and really mess up everything for everybody else. In this case, it was Sarah Carlin Moore.
I want our listeners to know that, you know, when this examination that's going on in the courtroom, there's such thing that's called, the courts allow witnesses, whether it was you or Daryl Philpott, to be impeached by evidence. And
yep.
You don't have a record. Your record is perfectly clean and clear, and you have upstanding resume of life, let's say, okay? But courts allow witnesses to be impeached by evidence of felonies and quote, crimes of moral turpitude, unquote. Okay, and so, you know, and so the prosecutor here is pretty much resisting anything entering the record that would be capable of doing that. Is that correct? From everything that I've learned and seen and talked about with your brother.
Yes, ma'am.
One of the things
I don't think I finished earlier was that Lance, being in the military, where the lawyers they don't make more money the more convictions they get, or doesn't get them more votes for the next election, or they don't. It's not based on money. The lawyers in the military, and I would like to point out that Lance started off as a infantryman in the 40 private as a troop, as a enlisted man, just like I did, my brother did, and my father was the infantry commander in the 45th Infantry Brigade in Oklahoma National Guard. My father was active Air Force during Vietnam. But I do want to point out that Lance has not always been a lawyer. The Army sent him. He was already a French commando, all of us were airborne. In his air assault, he's had 48 months he's done in combat zones. He's literally gotten his hands bloody carrying shot up soldiers before. So he was a captain when the Army sent him to law school. You know, I just want to point that out because people don't like lawyers,
right.
and I'm telling you, Army lawyers are different, and he's different than
not all lawyers and not all prosecutors are going to do what's going on here. I mean,
well,
I can't
my point,
stand
is
the
Lance,
whole. Right.
Lance is really, really shocked. Now, you cannot shock anyone in Delaware County about any type of corruption or drugs or murder or cover-ups or suspicious deaths. There are 53 suspicious deaths, by the way, in my little tiny judicial district here in Oklahoma. They're unsolved, by
yep.
the way. But anyway,
there's nothing you can say
to shock people around here. But Lance, you know, we left when we were kids and joined the military. When he comes back, he was shocked that Nick was so dishonest. He told me that today. He said, you know, I was reading that on the way over here, and you know, I'd already started to. I already changed my mind about Nick's intents, but it's obvious from reading here. He's even worse than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
So Nick,
right, like it's not a mistake anymore. He's not overlooking something.
Right, it's not a matter
of
mistake.
And
I told Lance a long time ago, Tanya, in 2015, in December, after my hearing, okay, when I had it, after Nick Velikas had this nutcase drug dealer get on the stand with two outstanding warrants for his arrest, and then he gets on the stand and he can't even identify me from my lawyer, and my lawyer is the one sitting there, even if he forgot what I looked at, my lawyer's sitting there, he's the one talking to the judge, standing up talking to the judge, you know, back and forth. He can't figure out that, you know, that guy's the lawyer, not me.
Listeners, I mean, all you need to do is listen to these audios, watch these videos that Ed has posted, and it's pretty telling. But the biggest problem here,
yes.
besides, you know, we know it, we see it, we know what's going on.
But Nick
Velikas
is not playing by the
on.
Rules. That's it. If they
but
don't play
not
by,
playing
the rules,
by the rules, and as
a
result,
it's a whole different deal.
As a result, we're looking at 10 years in prison. Okay,
right.
We're looking at 10 years in prison for something that was a stand your ground and self defense, in essence. It was definitely self-defense, and that's what you used your rights to protect yourself and your family. This happened, you know, close enough to your family house. So okay.
I had two little children then. I've had two more since then, but yes, I've got little children and, you know, and things to protect down here, not just me.
So we've got Philpott that has been, okay, so Philpott was shot by you in self-defense. So let's go back to this moment. Philpott was shot by you in self-defense. So what does he do? He's got a wound in his leg. And so he takes off ultimately in this truck without license plate. He, instead of calling the police and going straight to the hospital, what does he do? Goes. Do you want to share this?
He goes to my neighbor's house, who's his nephew's house, and changes his clothes because they were inundated with meth. And not only that, I don't know if Philpott's smart enough to think about it this in depth, but you can also look at the holes in the jeans and see the size of the holes. But mainly, they were just, he smelled like meth, which was smelled like cat urine in a litter box.
So his clothes were never entered into evidence.
Right, but he went to go change his clothes because he didn't want them smelling the meth all over him. You've heard that, you know, people, when they cook meth in town labs, you can smell it all over through the block. It stinks. But that's why he went to go, instead of going to the emergency room, he went over to his home to change clothes. And then instead of going to Grove, which is about 10 minutes closer, maybe 15, depending if you're in a car or a truck, He went to Gravette, Arkansas, where his – you remember the guy I told you was in the middle of the road when I pulled up on those guys?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was Philpott's nephew and the brother of my neighbor. And he worked at the emergency room in Gravette, Arkansas. So instead of going to Grove, which is closer, he went and changed clothes to get out of the meth clothes. Then he went to the ER over in Gravette, Arkansas, where his nephew worked.
Okay. And what does his nephew do there? What's his position?
He's a CNA, I think. I'm not sure. He doesn't work there now. I did go over there and I talked to everybody there, and they knew him.
We're going to mention briefly, because there will be another show that details this and also what happened with the briefing after your arraignment and discussing your arraignment. So we're going to talk about this elephant in the room very, very briefly, is the fact that Ed has been accused of shooting Philpott while his back was turned to him in the leg. And there's plenty of evidence stating differently. Okay, so again, listeners, there's really no doubt about it, except for the fact that you have got collaborating individuals that are trying to protect somebody that is their snitch, and the fact that they automatically went and pretty well automatically went and arrested Ed. They're trying to stand by their huge mistakes. Now, whether or not this doctor put in the note on purpose or by accident about where the bullet entered and exited, the trauma nurse had shared that it, and she's experienced, correct me if I'm wrong, that it went to the front of Philpott's leg. So indeed, his back was not turned to you, and out the back of the leg, and the entry wound is small compared to the exit wound. And you can elaborate as much as you want on that.
The wound nurse is an RN named Renzel Reardon, who has specialized training in wounds. Renzel is the only personnel at the emergency room that night that has the training to make a determination on the directional path of bullets through wounds. No one else has been trained on wounds in the emergency room that night. And, yes, he said, which is obvious from the photos on my website at firstfamilies.net, with first spelled out.
That show the wound.
The wound on the back of his leg is probably 5 to 6 times bigger than the little slit in the front of his leg. The front of the leg slit there, most of it, if you zoom into it, you can tell, most of it is a drop of blood. And in the back of the leg, you have a flowing, the blood is just gushing out of the wound, and which is characteristic of exit wounds. And not only that, there's a secondary exit wound right next to it where the bullet fragmented. If you zoom up, if you zoom into that, you can tell that secondary wound is also draining blood. So the blood is coming out, rushes coming out of the two holes in the back of the leg, which are many times bigger than the little slit in the front of the leg. And yes, that indicates that he was shot in the front of the leg. And everybody around here in the sticks knows that. They all either they hunt, or you know they're married to a man that hunts, or their daddy hunted, and no jury is going to think that those pictures show anything that, except for what they do show. And if they did show the opposite, then Gail Wells would have included them in the probable cause affidavit. He did not put these full-color black and white high-resolution photographs of the wounds in the probable cause affidavit. Instead, he put these 2 4-inch by 5.5-inch black and white grainy out of focus pictures of Philpott in the probable cause affidavit. One of them didn't even show the wound at all. It just showed Philpott looking sad in his hospital bed. So they had no probative value whatsoever. That they showed nothing. They didn't prove anything one way or the other.
Unfortunately, in the doctor's note, you know, this is, and I'm just bringing this out for our listeners so that you can hear that this is should be easily remediable. but they claim that he was shot while Philpott was shot with his back turned. So it's in the records. The doctor made note that the entry wound was the other way. But again, we will elaborate that on that, you know, as needed.
I would like to address that really, really quickly, since you brought up Tanya, Tanya, please.
Okay.
Those photographs, like I said, if you go to my website, you can see what they show. They show what they show. If they showed anything else, they would have been included in the report, and they weren't. Likewise, the nurse, who is the only person there with the experience and training that authorizes them to make a statement on the directional path of the bullet, who said it went from the front to the back, his report was left out of the probable cause affidavit that went to the DA. That's withholding exculpatory evidence on both of those.
Oh, boy.
Now, here's the thing.
Okay, and exculpatory evidence, to our listeners, is something that would help the defendant.
Exonerate.
And the prosecutor is he is responsible for, and he is by law supposed to provide any evidence that he has that the defense does not have. So once again, this is the prosecutor that is creating the narrative here, that is trying to control the record.
Now, Tanya, let me continue with one point, okay? So the pictures show what we see, and they corroborate the wound specialist, registered nurse's opinion that he was shot from the front to the back, okay? Both of those were left out, and in place of those were the black and white photos I showed. They're online in the probable cause affidavit. They show nothing. And then Deputy Melvin Gale Wells goes on to make the statement that the wounds, it appeared that the bullet went from the back of the leg to the front, okay? So he took out everything that showed otherwise, and then he made that statement, but he also left out the doctor's statement that it went, that said what Philpott wanted it to say and the sheriff wanted it to say. And the reason he left out that statement was he didn't want anybody's medical opinion in there, because if he put that in there, then someone would ask him, well, then why didn't you put in the nurse's opinion? So it was easier.
Okay, gotcha.
So it's easier just to leave out all medical opinions about the direction of the wound, especially since the nurse was trained on it and the doctor wasn't. Just leave them out and make the statement that was not true. And you can see that by the wounds at firstfamilies.net. It's clear as a bell, and I'm not worried about it at all.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that for me.
Okay.
So Ed, what our listeners know now is that Phil Pott did not take any measures at all in calling the police, explaining what happened. Instead, you know, he is trying to, you know, hide the evidence of his crimes, and he goes farther away where he's got a nephew that works at the ER, and on the way over there admits on the record that he finished up the rest of that half bottle of whiskey. So he had never reported this to the police. But
I want to point out that I did call 911
after the shooting. Right, exactly. What did you do after the shooting? What did you feel your moral obligations were?
Okay. Well, now after I shot him, and you would think that the person that was shot, the one that's supposed to be the victim, would be the one to call 911, wouldn't you?
You would think.
He never called.
You would
Bill
think.
Pott never called 911, and his kin.
Nor did his
right.
friends, right? And we know he was okay. And
so
he
I called 911. I drove into town. You can't get phone reception at my house in my holler. I had Verizon at the time, and back then, 4 years ago, you couldn't get any reception at all. And so I had to drive about halfway into town, 10 miles, and I called 911 and told them that about the shooting and to go get Philpott. And I called Lance, my brother, talked to him about what had happened because he's a lawyer.
He drove
and
to the sheriff's department.
Exactly.
Right?
He said, well, you know, that's by the book. Yeah, you know. He's telling me, as my brother, who happens to be a lawyer, he's advising me that we'll go make a statement. Okay, so I called. I called the sheriff's station and said, "Hey, I shot this guy. I'm coming in to make a statement. I'm sure you know the guy. He's a real thug, and they were. I told him what they were doing. I told him what had happened. I was coming in to make a statement. Well, I was met with a gun in my face." As I came into town by a police officer who no longer works at Jay Police Department, and wound up going to the sheriff's office where I got a hero's greeting. Everyone slapped me on the back, good job, you know, bringing me a drink of water, because they know what this is. It's not very often that a citizen will stand up against a creep like Daryl Philpott and his associates. And to this day, you won't find a deputy out there that was involved in my case or not that will speak ill of me in this case.
So the information that I see here is that the deputy that you talked to made no indication that you were in trouble. Okay, but as soon as he hung up with Captain Wells, who's the one who skedaddled on over to Arkansas, right?
Right.
To see Philpott, okay? Is that as soon as this deputy, the acting undersheriff, Captain, let me see. Deputy, you talked to him. So then as soon as he talked to Wells, the deputy told you that you were under arrest.
I'll tell you what that is. If you go to my website, you can listen to the entire interview, both mine with the detective Frank Miller, and you can listen to Philpott with Gail Wells, and you can compare the two, and you can hear Philpott being coached. His testimony is literally changed when he says it to the exact opposite of what he says, and all the way through it. Of course, when this was happening, Wells, the fraud, the deputy, he had no idea I would ever hear that, or anybody else. He thought I'd be in jail. Mm-hmm. I'd never have the money to, you know, post bail. It was a done deal. That's why they were so sloppy with all of this. But if you listen to my interview with the detective Frank Miller, who no longer works there for the department, it's really strange how all these guys don't work, you know, for this sheriff anymore.
God forbid, they're the good guys.
Yeah, they get out of there. Well, Frank Miller, and this guy is I did a background. I forgot how old he is. Probably 60. He's been law enforcement for a long time. But when Frank Miller's talking to me, it's very who, what, when, where, why, how, and very formal. And you listen to Wells, and it's he giggles and laughs and coos and fawns all over Philpott from the very beginning to the very end. He even tells him he has working man's hands, and he has to hold his hands. It is weird.
Isn't it a fact that before Philpott even told his version of the events, that before listening to either Philpott or you, he had already made up his mind?
In the opening minute and a half of the interview, if you listen to it, Wells refers to Philpott as the victim. That's before he hears Philpott's story or my story. He's decided that Philpott's the victim. And he reassured Philpott that I was in jail. The entire time he said, I just want to help you. Every time Philpott, the nutcase, would start to say something that Wells didn't want him to say, he'd either stop him or he would change the subject. It's just quite a deal if you listen to it. But if you listen to my interview with Frank Miller, it's the opposite. Frank Miller's a real cop conducting a real interview. And at the end of it, Frank Miller, he's, like I said, he's been around the block a few times, and he left his recorder on, okay? So after he talked to me, he calls Gail Wells, and you can hear both sides of the conversation. And the only way you could do that is if he hit the speakerphone on his cell phone, okay?
Okay.
So he's recording Gail Wells, and then he goes, and Gail hears him out and says, well, go call Sheriff, tell him. So, and to this day, I don't know for a fact, Gail Wells might have lied to Sheriff Harlan Moore about the bullet size, and you know who knows. I don't know where the collaboration stops or starts. But then when he talks to the sheriff, and you can hear the sheriff the entire time, and then the sheriff at the end of that tells him, "We'll go ahead and arrest him." He's like, "On what charge?" Said, you know, that he was, you know, on their land. And he goes, and then he told him what to arrest me on. I forgot what it was. I don't even remember now. But it's on that recording. They've changed my charges probably three or four times in those first 48 hours I was in jail.
Yeah, pick something out of the hat, right? So, I mean, is it your belief that Philpott's informant status is a factor on how this case was handled? Or do you think there are any other reasons why this has been mishandled, or why actually there's corruption, and I'll call it corruption, going on? Do you think this is just all about the...
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked. In one of my videos at firstfamilies.net and then on Facebook, if your listeners are not Facebook, they need to look up Edwin Hardy Turlington on Facebook. I've got 2,000 followers. I had 150 friends and stuff when it started. I've got 2,300, I think, now. And I've got thousands of views on these several videos I've made. But
that's good.
Yes, but they need to go to Facebook, look up Edwin, E-D-W-I-N as in November, Hardy, H-A-R-D-E-E as in General Hardy, Turlington, T-U-R-L-I-N as in November, G-T-O-N, and I'm the only one there, and add me as a friend and follow for these videos. But
what the hell was I talking about? Okay, so it was my whole thing.
Ma'am, let me tell you about the second one, please, okay? So I made a video when this first started about I was calling it An Innocent Man. It was The Innocent Man. It's a book I'd read probably, 20 years ago, Lance? And it was written by John Grisham, the best-selling author, but it was a true book, nonfiction book, about rural cops in Oklahoma that use snitches. They use informants as their sole basis. They use them so much in their day-to-day work because these rural law enforcement agencies don't have the money to properly investigate, and they don't have the funding to properly investigate, so they rely on snitches and testimonies. Well, same thing, listeners,
if you don't like to read books, it just came out on Netflix, and it's a series of 5 or 6. And I tell you what, the last 2 episodes really zoom in on the corruption in Oklahoma and just how they do it over and over and over again.
How vindictive they were. You'd think that they'd make a mistake and they'd back off, but they just went after that poor guy, and it got worse and worse and worse. There's a lot of differences here between him and me. My family founded this area when it was Indian Territory, the Pioneers. My father, he's been a high school principal at Grove. You know where Grove is? High school in the in the 70s. He was a superintendent in Afton, which is the other half of the judicial district, for 8 years. He was a superintendent at Oaks Indian Mission in Delaware County, where he had the country's first program where people could take Cherokee language as a foreign language to graduate, and he made national headlines on that. And he was the high school principal in Colcord, which is in Delaware County, and on and on and on. So if you see what my point is, my family's been here. There are thousands, literally, students that know. There are grown people now with families. My father has the same name as I do. They recognize me. I can't turn around anywhere and where there's not someone I know. And that includes heads of law enforcement agencies here. Not the sheriff here, because the sheriff's not from here, and neither is the guy that set me up. One from Denver.
Okay,
and one
so I
from...
want to make the most of the next 7 minutes that we have, that you have, right, before I close this out, right?
Yeah.
So this ranges from, you know, all these things, basically to set you up. It ranges from things like employment. So Philpott was asked on the stand, what occupation did he have? And he said, well, basically, you know, I'm not working, but... By the time Wells finished coaching him, he said, oh, I'm a laborer. And
handyman,
then,
exactly.
Things like that.
By the time he got back to the police report, guess what? He was unemployed again.
Right. Okay.
It just goes back and forth.
So there's
the lies are just constant, and you get lost in them.
Right. So there's a consistent pattern where Wells feeds the answers to Philpott, and every change that's made is a change that makes Philpott look better or makes you look worse. And even more on point, towards the end of the interview, from what I've learned, Philpott actually admitted that he did, like he called these cops, that, you know, police officers pulled him over. He called you a punk MF-er. And he wanted
and that's exactly
to
what
run.
He called the deputy Lampkin in the 2018 arrest. If you go watch it, he called him a punk MF-er. The exact same thing he called me. Exact same scenario.
And again, he's calling you out. He wanted you to put the gun down so you could fight like men. Well, God knows what his friends or he would have pulled out if you had put the gun down. So, and at that time, you were outnumbered 3-1. So there was no such thing as an honorable fight. And he was
in the middle of nowhere with no reception on a dirt road.
Right, okay. So the investigating officer didn't pursue anything, from what I can tell, that didn't fit in the predetermined outcome.
No, ma'am.
Philpott admitted he had been shot before, right?
Yes.
Okay. But doesn't that beg the question, what was Philpott doing the last time he was shot before? So these things aren't coming into play at all. They've been held back. So this guy's got a history of robbery, violence,
wife beating, attacking police officers physically, threatening to kill police officers.
And not just charges, but been found guilty. So,
convictions.
Okay. So it seems like, again, the lead investigator was shaping the narrative. So that's pretty well limited, from what I can tell, to just Captain Wells. Or, of course, we've got the prosecutor who seems to be working collaboratively against the truth. So we've got Captain Wells and Prosecutor Nick Lalikas that are demonstrating some pretty disturbing behavior that I'm going to call it corrupt, because they're denying you due process. And they are trying to create a record that isn't accurate, which is to influence the judge with inaccurate information.
Hey, and
before this is over,
I want to put out there, please. I forgot to tell you that Nick Lalikas is under investigation right now for not reporting that falsehood in the courtroom. And it's the Oklahoma Bar. The investigation number is DC, as in Delta Charlie, -18-258, and they are investigating him right now because of this. So things are looking
awesome.
A whole lot. They're looking up. The DA does not want to deal with me because he knows the minute he does, he's going to be bound to go notify the judges of this stuff. And so he's telling Lelicus to deal with it, but if it doesn't get dropped soon, I will write a registered letter to the DA to force his participation in my prosecution. And you'll have to make a decision whether or not to go tell the judges about if this is exculpatory evidence and the perjury, or is he going to do what Nick did and do nothing, and then he'll get investigation started on him. So things are looking up a lot, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate your help in all of this.
Well, if you weren't able to clearly prove your case, and it couldn't, you know, we're here because we believe you. I believe you. I mean, there's nothing not to believe from everything that we've seen. The only problem is the prosecutor and the investigating officer has done wrong. And yes, Tina, yes, it is. I'm getting messages here. It's a common thread. The predetermined outcome. Yep,
yes.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. So this is rampant in Oklahoma, and we are coming together in D.C., folks, this summer with other victims and advocates, from corruption in Oklahoma. We're putting groups together and showing up in D.C. We'll get into that more. In the future, but I'm starting up in the middle of a not-for-profit to help get people out to Oklahoma to spread the word to D.C. This is Oklahoma. This project is for Oklahoma, this not-for-profit specifically, to get out there and talk to the right people at the time of the annual whistleblower summit. So we've got really good things that are coming together. So listen, you guys, we have got Ed Turlington here, who has a history, a family history, going decades and decades back of respectful, involved roots in the community, and is a vet. He is a family man with young kids. And he is being persecuted by the people that are supposed to be going after this felon, Philpott, that's on the loose. He's on the loose right now. And mind you, listeners, Philpott appeared in court with open arrest warrants during the preliminary hearing. They knew it, and they let him walk in and out of there. So right now, Philpott is on the loose. He's a danger to society, out there with arrest warrants, but protected in Delaware County, Oklahoma. So I'm asking any listeners, anybody in the northeast area of Oklahoma, to please show up. Let the judge know people are looking, people are watching. Show up with notepads. Ed Turlington's side. I know it's way out there, but please do. I've got 60 seconds to go here. Please,
and tell them about
up.
Mazzio's briefing at lunchtime tomorrow in Grove. My brother's going to be putting on a briefing.
Yes, so we have got the arraignment tomorrow for Ed Turlington at Delaware County, which is in Jay, Oklahoma, the county seat, at 10 a.m. So it's State versus Edwin Hardin Turlington. And then immediately after that, or at noontime, forgive me, his brother, Lance Turlington, again, full bird colonel in the Army, lawyer, is giving a briefing. Where is this again, please, now?
It's going to be at Mazzio's Pizza in Grove, Oklahoma, at noon Indian time.
Okay. So I want to thank you all. You don't want to miss it. If you can be there, you don't want to miss it, but you will be hearing about it. I can guarantee you that. But it would be nice if you could be there. I want to thank you all for listening in Please show up in any way you can, whether you share this information, whether you write letters to the Attorney General's office, to the prosecutor's office, or show up as a court advocate, court watcher for Ed Turlington. Thank you for listening once again. We appreciate you all. Thank you, Stephen Burke from 89.9 KLRB. Thank you, Marty Oakley, for this wonderful here to expose Oklahoma at Marty Oakley's TS Radio Network. And thank you. God bless.
Thank you, you too, Tanya.